Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of The Bird Calls. I'm your host, David Grubb, and joining me is basketball analyst for Hard to Paint and The Bird Writes, Ben Pfeiffer. Ben, I don't even know where to start. I mean, you know, the Pelicans.
I feel like we were just here like a couple of days ago doing this exact same thing.
Yeah. And, you know, except this time it's the literal last chance for this team to extend its season, and the circumstances couldn't be more heavily weighed against them.
Yeah, this is pretty much everything that could have gone wrong went wrong, and the Pelicans, now it's your last shot to like put up or shut up. And I don't even know what to say. Let's just talk about it.
Man, this is obviously one of the oddest seasons in NBA history in this regard. To have a team that led the league in road wins, the entire NBA in road wins, and is in danger with a loss tomorrow of finishing 21-21 at home, losing 7 in a row to close out the season on its home floor. All of those games being critical games against playoff caliber opponents, except for the San Antonio Spurs. But, I mean, you've just gone down in defeat in every way possible. You've been blown out. You've lost at the last minute. You've lost in heartbreaking fashion. Still, all the things that were negatives have still been negatives in this losing stretch. The inability to close out games, this lack of success on their home floor, the one quarter of every game that just gets away from them completely defensively and offensively. It's a perfect storm of bad things for the New Orleans Pelicans.
And it's like the Pelicans won 4 games in a row on the road before this. Like they were, you know, they had a pretty tough, like, you know, a lot of these homes, you know, the home losses against OKC, against Boston, against, or like, they, you know, they could have won, but they played tough teams. It was a really tough home stretch. And then they go on the road. They win some games. They beat Phoenix. They beat Sacramento. They beat Golden State and like Portland or whoever, but they're in good form. And it's like, okay, you lose the Lakers, but you know, you got a game to get it right. And Zion has the game of his life and goes out with an injury when they had all the momentum late in the fourth quarter. There's a good chance they win that game outright if Zion ends up playing, just based on how the script was and how things were going. But I mean, the Zion injury just sucked the air out of that team and totally ruined any chance. And Brandon Ingram is clearly not healthy or not right in some way. Willie did not play him the last like 7 or 8 minutes of the fourth quarter. Whether that was a minutes restriction or him just trying to send a message or acknowledging that the lineup with Zion plus defenders and shooters was the one that was working for them, playing fast, playing in transition, making the Lakers, you know, taking the Lakers away from like the pick and roll offense that was killing them for most of the game. But like, it's tough when you don't have Zion, and though Ingram is going to play, it's like he does not look like himself. And, you know, I think it looks to me like he's not physically right. Like the explosion, like he's not separating like he normally does. And, you know, obviously we've talked about some of Ingram's weaknesses and strengths, but I think a lot, you know, there's only so much you can do if a guy's like not recovering from a lower body injury. And, you know, this is exactly the time where it's like, okay, Zion's out. This is when we need Ingram to step up, be our guy, get buckets, make plays. And they're not going to have that either. And the Kings are, you know, the Kings aren't healthy either, but they have their three best players healthy. The Pelicans don't have their two best players healthy.
No, they don't. And their third best player, the problem is, and I think people do this with CJ McCollum, is, you know, everybody was like, well, CJ didn't show up. I don't think people understand, again, how much when you change the dynamics of this offense, in particular, how much the other players on this team are impacted. And CJ is heavily impacted when you force him to be the primary ball handler. You saw what changed. And you and I both, you know, we said plenty of times, Jose is not a point guard per se. But yeah, Jose
played his,
one thing
played
that,
his ass off in the Lakers.
Played
game.
His ass like, off. Again, he was having the game of his life, too, in a lot of ways. But he got into the paint, which was something that nobody else on the roster outside of Zion was able to do. Jose played downhill. He played with aggression. And that allowed other guys to get shots. Jose was able to kick it out for a couple guys to get layups or three-pointers down that stretch. So for CJ, it's such a – it hurts CJ when you have to slow the game down as much as the Pelicans did, I think, to accommodate Brandon and him further being impaired just makes it worse. Like, you already are slowing down just naturally because as Brandon's on the floor – but when, like you said, he was only trying, essentially in the offense, he could only really go one-on-one because he wasn't really able to do much physically, it looked like, without the ball.
It was, yeah, I mean, it's tough when you have, like we talked about on the last podcast, CJ has done a great job this year running those secondary pick and rolls, shooting off the catch, his three-point volumes through the roof, but when you can trap him and blitz him and send primary pressure, like, he's just not built for that. It's not like, I don't know, like, I don't think it's as much of a fault against CJ as it is, like, that's just not who he is. Like, that's just not what his game is. It's not like he's bad because of it. It's just not what he does. And that's what happens when you ask players who aren't what they are to do things that they can't. And that, you know, it had me thinking, like, what are the Pelicans going to do exactly? They've played three games this season where neither Zion or Ingram played. And Ingram's going to play, but functionally, if it's anything like we saw on, what was it, on Tuesday, he's doubtful that he's going to be the kind of Ingram they need. So in their, you know, they're 2-1 without Zion and Ingram. The only loss was like the recent Spurs game, which they was like a 2-point loss. It's just got to be who else is stepping up, right? Like, is CJ just going to have a hot shooting night? This is a matchup where we've seen Jonas have success. So maybe he could be big, especially in the non-Sabonis lineups where they just have nobody who can handle him. This could also be maybe a Trey game because outside of Keegan Murray, who's phenomenal, and I want to talk about a little more at some point, but the Kings don't have really any great forward defenders. Like, if you can get him matched up with Harrison Barnes for extended stretches, I think you could really get him going. They've got to be throwing everything they have at this. Like, they've beaten the Kings 5 times this season, and beating a team 6 times in one regular, I don't even know, because the NBA doesn't even count the play-in as postseason or right. It didn't count as anything, which is dumb to me, but to beat a team 6 times, like, I mean, that's what we said about them beating the team 5 times, and then they did it. So who knows? But who knows?
Unlike any of those other matchups, this is unlike any of the other matchups with the Kings. You know, most of those matchups were early in the season. Of the five, 3 of those 5 came before January. So you've had the last two a little more recently, and those games were, you know, decisive wins for the Pelicans for the most part. I think out of the five, 4 of the 5 were of double digits. I think only one of them was around 5 points. I think that was the second one maybe this season. But, you know, yeah, generally they've dominated this team. But as you said, you got a Kings team now that kind of slayed its own dragon in beating the Warriors, a team that they view as it's, you know, it's that Northern California rivalry. between those two teams. You get to kind of put them out. And then you look at the Pelicans now, and as you said, you take away the thing that was the most glaring difference between the Pelicans and the Kings was the Pelicans' dominance inside. The Pelicans in the previous five games won by an average inside of 14 points per game. So obviously you're taking Zion averages, what, 20 points per game in the paint, 18 to 20 points per game in the paint. So you're taking that away. You're now at a deficit. You're starting at a deficit of minus six. So that means you've got to make threes to make up some of this deficit. And like you said, you've got to use Jonas Valanciunas because he's your only reliable low post scorer. I think that this is a huge game for the two guys you mentioned just right off the top, Jonas and Trey Murphy, because Trey against the Kings has been exceptional this year. He leads the team in plus minus in the three games that he played. Averaged, I think, 18 points a game against them, six boards, shot it very well, almost 47% from three for Trey against the Kings this year. And like you said, they really don't, outside of Keegan Murray, and Keegan's still a little shorter than Trey. Nobody has the length that Trey has. And I think Trey's rebounding becomes extremely important in this game because he's likely to get the start in place of Zion at that four spot, which means he's got to clean up the glass and keep guys like Barnes from getting second chance points or the Kings getting second taps out and having Sabonis be able to kick it out to a shooter for three.
Yeah. And I was looking at Zion played a bunch of that last King, the last Pelicans Kings game they won with no Ingram and Zion, and Zion like played a bunch of the first half and then it was already kind of out of hand. I'm like, what are they doing without Zion on the floor? And they were running a lot of I think they were having success with the CJ Jonas two-man game, whether dribble handoffs, pick and rolls, getting him in like the mid-range to that kind of pick and pop area was pretty good, as well as really like trying to use CJ as a playmaker. And I wonder if we just see him go like full playmaking mode, because he was trying to score against the Lakers and he had, I think, six assists in that game. The shots weren't working, but since the Kings are a team that like they're not afraid to play high at the level, they're not, they're not the best when it comes to like their backside rotations and their help defense, like that's just not what they do. The Kings are a better defensive team than they were maybe like a couple months ago, but they're still not great at this point. So obviously you're losing a lot of pressure without Zion, but I think we've seen Valanciunas be effective as a release valve against this kind of like pulling Sabonis out towards the basket, because the Kings want to play like the lock and trail drop coverage. Like they're not going to want to let CJ get free for his pull-ups. They're going to stick Keon Ellis or Davion Mitchell on him and attempt to force CJ to either drive or pass, deep into the paint or make passes. And it's going to be really reliant on, I think, Jonas or Nance or whoever being a release valve. And then just guys like Trey and Herb and Najee or whoever, or Dyson, to make plays off the catch to make good decisions. And I wonder how much the Pelicans will treat this as like a playoff matchup in terms of game planning. I mean, they obviously should be. So it's like when Harrison Barnes is out there, are you going to hunt and target him as one of the weaker wing defenders in the entire NBA? Oftentimes the Kings will have Fox guarding in this matchup. They'd have him cross with Dyson Daniels since he was the primary matchup. And if you can, force Fox to be one of the off-ball low defenders instead of guarding the ball where he's best, like, because you're probably not going to have Dyson Daniels handling the ball as much. Like, you can, hopefully bring out Sabonis, force into the rim towards Fox, and then hopefully finish there. So it's going to have to be a lot of, I think the pace is going to be important for sure, as it always is. This team, like, we know how good and how hard they can be to stop when they're playing fast and controlled. And we know that, like, they have formulas that work against the Kings. Obviously, Zion's a big part of that, but we've seen them do it with Zion off the floor, too. Like, the Kings are not the best defensive team, and there's a lot of areas to exploit. Like, at most, they're going to have two, maybe three really good defenders on the floor. So, like, there still are many, like, plenty of avenues to win this matchup. But they're really going to have to, I feel like, mentally just like lock in a way that they haven't recently. More than anything on the court, it's like yes, some of this, like, with this, you know, it's bad. There's been bad luck. There's been bad variance, but like that shit happens. Like, that's basketball. Like, that's the league. And it's like, can you that's sometimes it doesn't go your way. That's the way it is. And the great teams are the ones who will respond in the face of that. And we will see what happens. I mean, tomorrow when we're recording this, but I don't know. I really don't know what's going to happen. I have no idea.
It's one of the things that psychologically sticks with me is that now you're going into your home court, and your fan base doesn't feel great about the home court. They don't understand it. You saw the way over the last couple games, there were a lot of Lakers fans in the building on Sunday, not so as many on Tuesday, but it was heavy Lakers on Sunday. And the crowd by the end of the third quarter had kind of turned. I mean, Pelicans fans were starting to abandon the arena. You saw folks stay, but there were a lot of folks who were starting to leave at the end of the third again. Because of the Pelicans' record. They have still not won a game that they've trailed after three quarters. They still have one of the worst clutch ratings in the league.
That's insane. That's absolutely nuts.
Like, none of this makes sense. None of this makes sense. We've never seen a team end a season this way that has this many wins. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're talking about a team that was on the verge of 50 wins, and we've never seen this type of ending if this is the way it goes out. To lose this many at home, to lose when you were favored the way that they've been, they finally won't be favored tomorrow. They're, I think right now, as we're recording, I think a 2-point underdog at home to the Kings, and certainly Zion Williamson is a big part of that, but I think it would have been a pick 'em either way, the way the Pelicans have played at home this season. It's just gotten to the point where I think the fan base on Friday night is very much, and it's an 8:30 tip at that, which is really bad for a Friday night in New Orleans to get folks an 8:30 tip for a team that could be eliminated from the playoffs. I think it's going to be a slow arriving crowd. And I think that they are going to be looking either for a reason to stay or a reason to leave. And it's going to be in those first 12 minutes of the game, whether or not they decide to stay or not.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. I mean, there's just something unquantifiable about the vibes being really off at the moment. Like, the vibes are not good. And I mean, that was also the case for the Kings ending the season, but they clobbered the Warriors, who frankly looked extremely checked out in that loss. You know, they were contemplating their legacy and staring up at the clock the whole time. It wasn't like they really got a ton of resistance from the Warriors, but they're coming off of a game where they beat the crap out of their opponent. And the Pelicans are coming off of like a heartbreaking, heart-wrenching loss that ended up resulting in the loss of their best player to injury for the foreseeable future. Like, what? Even if they do win, Zion's going to miss like at least part of the OKC series, right? Because they said 2 weeks.
He missed the entire series.
Yeah.
But you talk about 2 weeks just for an evaluation. And you know how it goes with the Pelicans. So you're talking at least another week after that to ramp him up, which would put you into the second round. And I don't see how you beat the Thunder in seven games without Zion.
Yeah. I mean, even with Zion, that's a tough ask. Any 18, you know, let alone like a really, really formidable OKC team. I think Zion would have been really good in that matchup. It's like one place that they can, you know, that he can have success. And now that's not even going to be the case. And maybe, you know, it'll still be a case where OKC's youth and inexperience catches up to them, and the Pelicans have guys who've been in the playoffs. They've had guys who've gone deep. So maybe that makes some kind of difference. But it all feels so futile. Because again, it's like, even if they win this, it's like, what are the odds they win this game, escape round one with no Zion? And then it's like, okay, like, you know, round two against Denver or whoever. Or it's like, oh, you get Zion back. And I don't know. I feel like the optimism for how this season could end, it has quickly evaporated. Like,
I want to get your thoughts on this because, let's say even if they do win this game, a point was made on X about the fact that, look, you can't really change the way you evaluate this team now, just no matter what goes on. You have enough data from this season. You saw enough. You got Zion Williams to career high games. Again, we got Brandon Ingram more games than he had played since his rookie season. You got your starters on the floor for the vast majority of the season. Your key reserves played more than 60 games each. You got what you wanted to see as far as figuring out, if you're the front office, where this team is headed. It's up to them to make those decisions. But I don't think the playoffs should change if they do get into the playoffs, or even these last three games or so. It should change what we saw over the course of 82.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, there's so much weirdness going on right now with the Pelicans that I think it's fair, win or lose, like, to chalk this up to some extremely poor and strange luck. And I think we have enough data over these last, this year and the last couple years of this same core, pretty much, to understand what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, what their limits are. And as I think we said this on the last podcast, and I was talking about during that game, they've built a really good team that has clear limitations when it comes to winning at the next level. And at the top of that is, like, your 1A star can't stay healthy and keeps getting injured in the weirdest. And, like, I don't know, were we able to, like, see, like, what the impact was that, like, he got injured on? Because what was it, the landing? Because I watched that play back a bunch of times and I couldn't seem to tell, like, where the injury actually was.
I think it may have happened earlier, and then the landing was the thing that really set it off.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I think when he went down earlier, he felt like maybe a twinge, and he got up and gets through the play. And then when he lands, he's like, okay, it's the hand.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because it didn't look like there was, like, a weird bend or a weird fall. Like, he on that last play, he, like, isolated against AD, he drove, he hit a floater, looked normal enough. There's just nothing you can really do about that. And I've seen some people, like, you know, like, oh, like, you know, Pelicans built, you know, should they be building around a star that's has, you know, injury concerns? And I think that's kind of a dumb thing to really ponder. Like, of course they should be. They're not going to have a better option. Obviously, you wish your star was bulletproof, but most aren't. And, like, even guys like, I think about Embiid, who was injured for so much of his early career, and obviously still has those issues, but developed into an MVP. And I think most of us would probably agree that Zion could do the same. And your odds of getting another guy who can do what Zion does is so much lower than the odds of Zion putting together just one healthy season. And he was healthy for this season. Like, he only missed like 11 or 12 games. And that's all you need. You just need some better timing. And yeah, I think we've talked about some of the Pelicans' issues, right? Their lack of rim protection, their lack of secondary playmaking, and their lack of ball handling. And, you know, we see how much of a difference it makes when guys like Jose, like they did on, usually are able to handle the ball effectively, get into the paint, make passes. And like, Jose, for as good as he is, he isn't always able to do that. That's not something he's consistently good at. There are games and moments where he has it, but he's not someone who you want to consistently ask to be, like, your, you know, your floor general. So yeah, I don't think like the loss or the win would make me, like, I mean, if I was a Pelicans fan, I would understand being just, like, totally despondent. Because if I was a Pelicans fan, I would be distraught right now, personally. I'm not, and I, you know, have that neutral point of view. But, like, I think regardless, like there's good and bad takeaways from this season. I think it's, you just have to laugh at how this season has ended. Like, what else can we do?
What else can you do? You're absolutely right. It's almost like only the Pelicans. I mean, like, there was a time in the NBA when stuff would happen, you'd be like, only the Clippers, man. Like, every year it's just like, yeah, that stuff only happens to the Clippers. And now it kind of feels like the Pelicans are that team in the NBA where on a year-to-year basis you're like, how does this keep happening to them? How these ways, they're so different yet so similar in their timing and how things go down. Because we were in the same situation in a way last year, going into the play-in and kind of hoping, like, is Zion going to be available? And the controversy about that, and he really ultimately wasn't. But, you know, for B.I., I think it's Yeah, it's a tough position for him to be put in because he would have been questioned. Absolutely. He would have been questioned if he had not come back to play. And he gets questioned regardless because of the performance of these two games.
I mean, I commend him for trying. Like, I respect him. I mean, again, assuming this decision was made with full confidence in the medical staff, like, this is not going to screw things up more long term. Like, yeah, like, commended for trying and coming back. And, like, you know, clearly, like, wants to win, competitor, wants to help the team as much as he can. But at a certain point, it's like, I don't think blaming Ingram at this, like, you and I have done enough Ingram blaming in the past, but this is not, like, I can't bring myself to be like a clearly injured Brandon Ingram is like the limiting factor here, because it's just, it's not, it's just not. And all this is like going to sound really, this whole podcast is going to sound so funny when they like beat the Kings by 20 or something in the playoffs, but like,
just again, it just feels the short term though. Win or lose, it just feels short term happiness because they're the odds of winning a 7-game series were hard even with Zion. Like you said, it was really hard with Zion. And now it just feels like they're just overmatched.
Because like it felt like if the Pelicans had the version of Zion that they had on Tuesday, I feel like they have a chance. They have a chance against almost anyone with that kind of Zion. Yeah. And like they almost came back and beat a pretty good Lakers team with everyone else playing, pretty much everyone else playing terribly, and Zion carrying. And I think that would have been like a scary thing for OKC. I don't think it would have been a lock that the Thunder just walk over the Pelicans if Zion's playing like an MVP level guy, but I guess we'll never know, or maybe we will if something miraculous happens. Who knows?
Mr. Miyagi moment.
Maybe there'll be some medical miracle, and he'll walk out of the tunnel, and he'll have his WWE moment, and it'll be great. But
let's talk about the Kings quickly, because look, we've broken down how the Pelicans have been able to do with De'Aaron Fox throughout the season and Sabonis, but it's the other guys. It's always the other guys when you get to the playoffs. You know what stars typically are going to do. It's how do you deal with the supporting cast? And outside of Harrison Barnes, who the Pelicans have dealt with plenty and is one of those guys who either he's hot or he's worthless, it seems like on a night-to-night basis, there are some really interesting players on this Kings roster. Talk about which other players who you think could be the biggest X factors in this game.
Yeah, and as I alluded to earlier, I think Keegan Murray is the obvious primary one, who's taken another leap in his second year for the Kings. He's just a phenomenal all-around secondary offensive option. And the thing with Keegan is, like, he's so hard because he doesn't need the ball and he doesn't need plays run for. He doesn't need game plans to make you pay. He's such a good shooter. He's so good moving without the ball, and he can put the ball on the floor and like take a dribble or two towards the middle and get to his pull-up jumper. Like, works perfectly with that like dribble handoff offense. And as I kind of said before, I think the Pelicans have the personnel to defend them. We talked about the limitations of their like rangy wing bench, but this is a team where it's like, okay, this is why you have these guys. They're all going to play their part and make this hard. And I think Keegan is, you know, I think he had 27 or like, he had a lot of points against the Warriors in that play-in game. And he was shooting the ball from everywhere. They were getting him downhill off of their dribble handoff pitches and their pistol motion. And he was getting to his spots. And it's tough. Like this, again, as we talk about, this is a matchup where you can probably have JV on the floor. He can deal with Sabonis. Obviously, the Kings are going to bring him out as they play Sabonis on the perimeter a lot, but still, this is a matchup where it'll work more than other matchups. And, you know, obviously, Fox is the kind of guy who can go off and get his, but the Kings have the personnel to defend that. I want to once again shout out Keon Ellis, who I talked about on the last podcast. He had a great game against the Warriors just recently. He was a part of a big reason that Klay did not score against him in that game, or, you know, barely scored. I'm pretty sure he didn't score.
No, 0 for the night. For the night.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think that kind of defender is someone who the Kings are going to have, who's CJ's matchup's going to be for all of the time that they share the court. It's going to be Keon Ellis checking him. He had three steals and three blocks in that game. So he's someone who, again, offensively, he's not so threatening, but he can hit. He can hit open shots. He can make simple plays. And if you're leaving him open, if you're not respecting him, then they can kind of kill. But one of the things that the Kings have their guys who they can run with, but the Kings are not deep. The Pelicans are obviously shallow because of injuries. The Pelicans are a deep team in terms of having guys who they can play and rely on. Even mm-hmm. if they're flawed, they have 9-10 guys who, like, in a pinch, like, okay, we need you to go do something. They can probably contribute. The Kings, not so much. I mean, so outside of their five, they're, you know, De'Aaron Fox, Sabonis, Barnes, Keegan, Keon Ellis. Their like next best guy is probably like Trey Lyles, who has some utility as like a more. He has some utility as like a pretty, you know, he's somehow one of their better forward defenders and can shoot a little bit. And but like, he's not someone you're really scared of. Or like Davion Mitchell, who's like, you know, a nice on-ball defender. Another one who's going to, you know, defend CJ, but is pretty much useless on offense, and someone who the Pelicans can effectively ignore or you know, pretty much ignore on when he's on the court. It's like making a 4-5, like, what, they're going to play like JaVale or like Vezenkov hasn't done much this season. The rest of their bench is made up with like rookies, and like Chris Duarte got like coaches DNP against the Warriors. So this is another place where the Pelicans' pace could be really beneficial, because even if the stars aren't you know, fully there, they can go eight deep still and have players who are willing to run and you know, and push the pace and tire out the Kings. And the Kings just don't have the bench. They don't have the depth to compete. Their bench is not good. So I think that's a potential area that the Pelicans can look to exploit. But otherwise, yeah, I think paying attention to Keegan Murray, not be very diligent about like not letting him have like one of his games. Because if he does, he can get hot in a hurry and just absolutely rip you apart. But again, like even without Zion and with Ingram banged up, this is a favorable matchup. We've seen this all season.
Yeah, I think that the other big part of it is, like you said, the Pelicans are able to generate turnovers against the Kings' wings. They are able to force them to give up the ball. And that'll be the thing. I think the Pelicans have to win this game on energy and pressure. They have to be the more aggressive team from start, put on-ball pressure, force De'Aaron Fox to use energy when he does have the basketball, and stay at home. I think that's the biggest thing. If they over-rotate and give the open looks to Keegan Murray or give Harrison Barnes a couple of open threes in the corner early, and he can knock those down and say, oh, tonight I've got a rhythm, you know, that's where the Pelicans could go wrong. But otherwise, like you said, the matchup generally is favorable for them. They can run off makes and misses against the Kings, and they'll be able to you know, if you get movement in the half court, if you're even just getting on ball screens, you can get downhill against this team. It's just that, you know, are the Pelicans going to be disciplined enough, and can you rely on your secondary guys? I think you have to kind of, I'd almost play this like the way they played the Dallas Mavericks game when Zion and BI were hurt and, you know, there were starters missing and they went with the bench guys. I'd kind of almost take the pressure off BI and be like, BI, you're going to run with the second unit today, because I was limited minutes.
I was thinking about that game. I'm like, could this be a Jordan Hawkins game? Like, I wonder if
it really could.
I wonder if this would be where a guy like that comes in. And I think that, like, I was gonna say, like you said, with the ball, we're the Pelicans have got us in some kind of way. Like you said, with the ball pressure, I think this is a like the main area where the Kings are really missing Herter and Malik Monk. Where those wings, Barnes, you know, I think Murray mostly, but Barnes as well, can punish you with scores, but neither of them are really playmakers. And I mean, Barnes never really was. And Keegan, you know, could develop into that one day, but he's still really young and still isn't the greatest playmaker and decision maker in tight spaces. So, yeah, you pressure those guys. You force them to be the ones making decisions. You're like, okay, we're going to take the ball out of Sabonis' hands. We're going to take the ball out of Fox's hands. We're going to say, you guys have to go run the offense and make decisions. And if you lose to that, you lose to that. But at some point, that's just the bet you have to make, right? Like, when these playoff type settings go, and this is by all intents and purposes a playoff game, you have to make concessions and point out where the other team's weak links are. And the Kings' decision making outside of their stars and that playmaking, like, they're missing their two best secondary playmakers. Like, and obviously the Pelicans are, but you got to use that to your advantage too.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about, you know, 8-9 assists that you're missing off the, you know, out of Herter and Monk. And then Monk does things that you just can't replicate athletically on both ends of the ball.
Such a great season. Like,
his maturation, I mean, think about this. Again, with Malik Monk, it's just random, but this is a dude who had no offers a couple years ago. Like, just nobody. When he left the Hornets, nobody wanted to sign him. It's just crazy. And now he's sixth man of the year candidate. But
he had that little thing with the Lakers, and now he's like a legit offensive initiator off the bench. And it's like, as we've talked before, like, if the Pelicans could steal anyone from the Kings, I'm like, that would be the guy. I mean, you know, I'll take Fox, but like,
I mean, yeah, of course, but they're not giving up De'Aaron Fox. So if you could get somebody that, it would be nice to have a scorer off the bench. It really would, to have that kind of guy who could do it for himself and create those shots for other people. It's just a luxury the Pelicans don't have.
And there's not a lot of players who do that like him.
No. But I mean, I think it's going to be, and I know this isn't the thing, the time or the place, but I think it's just, there are times when I look at the playoffs and I have regrets of players that I think the Pelicans could have gotten at certain times in their deals. Like, I go back to the Jrue Holiday deal and I'm like, why didn't you ask for Dante DiVincenzo? Yeah. Like, I would have had to have had Dante DiVincenzo on that deal. I loved
especially with how he's playing now. Like,
right? Like, I mean, but you saw a guy who was coming out of Villanova. You saw the things that you see out of most Villanova guys. He was tough. He was willing to take good shots, big shots, and he played both ends of the floor intelligently. And you saw that growth. He did his apprenticeship with the Bucks, and then he goes to the Warriors and learns from them. And now with the Knicks, he sets the Knicks franchise record for threes in a season. So it just, you know, there are certain times when I look around at guys that Pelicans could have had, and I'm like, you took, dang, you know, the stuff they took with George Hill and Eric Bledsoe. I'd be like, I'd much rather had Dante DiVincenzo.
Outdated way of thinking about team building with those guys, like undervaluing these like players who can pass and dribble and make good decisions for like maybe more traditional like point guard types, like athletes who aren't really as, you know, as a, but like I think about even like the Jordan Hawkins pick. Like, I think Hawkins is going to be good. He's had a flash this season, but he's not like a Malik Monk type where you give him the ball and he creates. Like, you have to run stuff for him off the ball. And when you do get him as a movement shooter, like, he's great. That's what they draft, you know, that's hopefully what they drafted him to do. But I'm like, obviously hindsight's 20/20, but like, I'm looking at a guy like Brandon Podziemski or like, even like Keontae George, and I'm like, man, those guys could help the Pelicans right now. And, you know, I think even though I was pretty high on Podziemski, but I think he's even better than most people expected. I'm just like, one more piece and maybe they get it. But who knows? We're just, it's all hypothetical at this point. But.
Yeah, the other one that got away from me is Derek Lively.
That was just the one that we were talking about before the draft. Is such a perfect fit.
You and I were both big fans of his game. Perfect offensive rebounder.
I mean, they probably would have taken him if he fell. But he, you know, sometimes you miss out on guys. And like I, you know, we've talked enough about the Hawkins pick in the past. But yeah, you know, they got picks this year. They got free agency this year. And then I think that's what we got to think about, right? It's, this season seems like it's kind of cooked. So what do we do moving forward? Because obviously, like, as doomer as we can be about the Pelicans, like, they're in a better spot than the majority of teams, like, in terms of building for a championship. Like, you have your guy and you have a lot of good players and a lot of picks and a lot of, like, they're in a place where they can win and they can make moves and they can, a couple of moves here, you know, one star-ish trade, a couple swing moves, and they're there. So I think, though, even though the optimism has kind of faded quickly for this season, like long term, there's, you know, this team is still in position to continue to get better and continue to improve if they make the right decisions.
As long as the front office doesn't fall in love with its own players. And that's always the thing, is they tell you, don't fall in love with your own guys. You should properly evaluate them, know what they're worth. Mm-hmm. Get what you're worth for, what they're worth for.
Oh yeah,
but yeah, don't overestimate like, the value.
It's always thing like, you know, impossible to really know, but like how much is ownership, you know, fact like try how much are goals from the top level, like build a team that's going to get us to the playoffs versus build a team that's optimized to win us championships. And like obviously when we, you know, you and I and other people on like, you know, on the internet think about team building, it's from the perspective of, okay, how can we move this team closer to a championship? But that's obviously there's other circumstances and considerations. But you know, overall, like for all the complaining we can do, I think the Pelicans front office has generally done a pretty good job acquiring talent over the last 4 or 5 years. And like, I think we'd have enough reason to believe that they can, like, they do have the ability to evaluate talent and to put together good players. Just, you know, can they do it? And can they get it to that level where they're winning a title? But time will tell, and it's probably not going to be this season, but who knows? Maybe in the next couple of years, some curse will break.
Last thing before I let you go, were you surprised that the Willie Green extension, still hasn't been officially announced, but it was done under this, I guess, auspice of secrecy because it leaked a few days ago that Willie has an extension, but the terms and the number of years aren't out yet, but it's a little surprising for an organization like the Pelicans because David Griffin's was done quietly, but that wasn't as surprising that Griff's was done quietly because of the public reaction. But I think with your head coach, usually if you're going to announce, you know, an extension for your head coach, that's supposed to be a good thing. That's supposed to be a symbol and a sign to your fan base and those players that there's stability here.
Yeah, that is certainly strange. I don't really know if, like, I can't remember something like this, where, like, a good team ended up being so coy about extending their coach. And, like, you know, I think we both have our issues with Willie and the way he, you know, runs the team sometimes, but I don't think he's a bad coach. And, like, I certainly understand extending him. Like, I don't think this is something to be, like, ashamed of, especially, you know, compared to some of the other coaches in the league, like. I think that you could do a lot worse than Willie Green and his staff. Like you really could. But yeah, that is strange that they didn't like announce it because they normally announce it. And like, maybe they're like, this isn't the time or like, but I don't know. I mean, I really don't know why they wouldn't like, why they would just let that leak out rather than like, it's strange. I don't really know what to make of it. It's weird. It's a little off.
It's the Pelicans.
It just confounds the vibes being screwed at the end of the season. Like it's just another notch in the cap of the everything being out of whack. And
so either in this time, 24 hours from now, we'll be talking about the Pelican season being over and moving on to the off season and thinking about the draft, or we'll be talking about them matching up against the Oklahoma City Thunder.
We'll have fun regardless.
We'll have fun either way, but if you ask me right now, I'll go with you. I will ride with you and say the Pelicans get the unprecedented sixth win over the Kings. I think they win this game by 5 points. I think they win this one by 5 points. It won't be easy. This is, you know, it couldn't be any other way, but I think the Pelicans hang on for and live to fight another day.
Yeah, I feel like they're due at this point. Like they're due. And I do think like the main thing working against them is just like, if, you know, if the mental is not there in the building, because on paper, even with all the Pelicans have lost, this is a very winnable game. It's a very winnable game.
I think you just need, like, you don't need a, like, they've beaten the Kings this year with Brandon Ingram scoring 15 points. Mm-hmm. So you can do it. It's, does B.I. give you that efficiency with 15? Does he pass the ball well? Does he not turn it over? And if B.I. is only going to give you 24 to 28 minutes, which seems like that's the area that he was playing in, then in those 24 to 28 minutes, then I'd like to see 15, 5, and 5. If you give me 15, 5, and 5 in those 20-plus minutes, hey, man, and get to the line.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I'd like to see B.I. not catch it up top so much in this game, but be, since there is no Zion, be a guy who catches it in that mid-post a little bit more. Give yourself a break. Post up your smaller defender. And get your 1-2 dribbles rhythm and shoot, you know, right there. Give some up and under fakes. Give some fadeaway jumpers. But don't put yourself in a position where you've got to initiate constantly. Because physically, like you said, it's just not there. The first step isn't there. The elevation isn't there. So to take the wear off on the offensive end, because your effort's going to be needed on the defensive glass. And, you know, in your individual defensive matchup. So I think it's make offense as easy as you can for yourself.
Absolutely. They've got to make it easy because they don't have the guys who can get the hard stuff. I mean, that's what Zion does. That's what Ingram does when he's healthy. They don't have that. So they've got to do it the good old fashioned way. So
that's right. Ben, thank you so much again. Tell the folks quickly how they can follow you on X and the other stuff that you're doing, man.
Yeah, of course, just at BJPF underscore everywhere, my name. I'm going to be doing Pelicans content. I'm excited to get into whatever's next, whether that's playoff previews, diving into those matchups, or heading, you know, focusing ahead to free agency and the draft, either way. But yeah, follow me on Twitter, X, and YouTube, TikTok, all the above, and I'm sure we'll be back talking about, you know, something good or something bad or something at some point in the near future.
Yes, we will. So for Ben Pfeiffer, I am David Grubb. Make sure you like, subscribe, rate us, get it wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. This has been The Bird Calls. And until the next time, let's go Pels.